From Maine Public Radio and MainePublic.org, I'm Jennifer Mitchell with the news on this day in Maine, December 26th, 2019. This Day in Maine is made possible by Douglas Ridge, a new eco-conservation subdivision in Brunswick, dedicated to nature-centric sustainable home design. More at douglasridge.com. This month, reporter Lindsay Tice of the Sun Journal in Lewiston wrote about a nursing home in Lewiston that's on a federal list of problem facilities. Complaints about Marshwood Center in Lewiston allege that patients have suffered from maggot-infested wounds, have been left in beds soiled with urine and feces, and sometimes go without food for 14 hours. Lindsay Tice joins us now to tell us more. Welcome, Lindsay.
Thank you.
So, Lindsay, some of the complaints about Marshwood sound, well, severe. So what have some patients been experiencing?
So they are severe, and they're so severe, actually, that the state has focused on this facility as a special focus. So they say, you're so bad that you guys really need to clean up your act, and you need to do it now. Some of these problems include folks not having their wounds tended to correctly, care plans not being either made or followed, which means patients aren't being cared for properly. You've got folks without food. You've got folks without at least nutritious food when they need it. A host of problems, especially one of the things I ran into repeatedly was folks not having their call bells answered. So these are folks who need help, let's say, going to the bathroom or getting up out of bed. They can't do it themselves. They're in a nursing home or a rehab facility for a reason. And so when they can't get them answered, they lay there. And they lay there for sometimes hours, and sometimes they don't make it to the bathroom, which obviously can be a very big problem for folks.
Maggot-infested wounds. Mm. I mean, that's not something that you hear about a lot in a country like the United States. I'm guessing there are quite a few gasps going on around the state right now. How does that come about?
So what happened in that situation, and we found out about that was an investigative report. So the state and the feds work together. The state sends in investigators. And so this was part of the report that one of those folks wrote up. And so in that case, a person was in Marshwood. They had diabetic wounds. They were a diabetic patient. They had wounds on their feet. And the nursing home was supposed to take care of that. Marshwood was supposed to take care of it. Apparently, they did not, or at least they did not do so properly, because when the patient left, they had more wounds than when they went in. One of those wounds, according to the spouse, had maggots when they got home. The stench was very bad. The spouse was obviously appalled, and the person ended up back in the hospital pretty much immediately.
So Marshwood is not the only facility on this list. There are others, but what makes it stand out, I guess, compared to other nursing homes?
Sure. They've got sustained problems. They've had problems for a very long time, for what some folks say is years. They've got more problems than usual. Every place is going to have some problems. You know, we're all human, things happen, but they've got significant and severe problems, and they've had them for a long time. And they've got multiple issues. So you're not just talking one area. So not just food or not just wound care or not just care plans, but you've got multiple sustained and varying problems.
How are Marshwood's administrators responding to these kinds of complaints, and what are state and federal regulators doing?
Good question. So administrators didn't respond to us very much. When I did this story, the administrator at Marshwood declined to talk. Marshwood is owned by Genesis Healthcare, which is a national company, a national for-profit company. They issued a statement that said basically in part, we care about our people. And that was largely it. After my second story that looked more comprehensively at some of the families involved in the family situations, I got a more all-encompassing statement from Genesis. The local folks still wouldn't talk, but Genesis outlined some of the things that they were doing, which was they brought in an outside company to look at wound care. They brought in an outside company to look at ways where they can improve. They've done a new administrator for the Marshwood, things like that. So they say that they're moving forward. The state ombudsman program, long-term care ombudsman program, is also working to get a patient family panel there. So these are folks that will gather, will be kind of spokespeople for the families and say to administrators, hey, we have this issue, we have that issue. What are you guys going to do to take care of it? The state has named Marshwood a special focus facility, which means they are on this problem list, but they are a big problem even on the problem list. And so they are going to be focused for the next at least couple of years. They're going to be getting more inspections, more focus on them. If they don't start improving, there are going to be penalties up to and including at the end of the next 2 years, potentially the loss of Medicaid and Medicare funding, which for most nursing homes is a large portion of their funding.
So you mentioned you did a second story after that first one came out. So what have you heard back from readers? What's the reaction been like?
We've been getting a lot of reader responses. So a lot of emails, social media contacts, phone calls, all from families that are just distraught. Their loved one was in Marshwood at some point, or they were in Marshwood at some point. And they have just some very disturbing stories to tell. And all of them have very similar elements of folks not answering, staff not answering call bells, you know, folks being left to languish without care, that kind of thing. And unfortunately, we're also getting some calls and emails from folks at nursing homes outside of Marshwood. So other nursing homes where they say, hey, this is not just there. We've got issues elsewhere as well.
So what's the takeaway from this? What should people who need nursing home care, you know, be thinking about this or taking away from it? What can they do to ensure that they, you know, get quality care or work with a quality facility?
I think that is really the takeaway, is that you need to do your due diligence. You need to look at the places where you're going to go. And that's not always possible. Often, you know, if you've got a loved one and it's an emergency situation and there's a bed open, you're going to go for that first bed. But the takeaway from this is that if you've got time, if you've got that luxury, don't just go for the first open bed. Take a look at the place. Talk with your doctors. Talk with your friends and neighbors, anybody who's had any kind of a relationship at all with a nursing facility or a rehab facility, to say, what was your experience there? What did you like? What didn't you like? What concerned you? What should I be aware of? Talk with the ombudsman's program. That's what they're there for. Ask them questions. Sometimes they will even go on tours with you so that you get, you know, they point out things and you understand more deeply what you're looking at there. And make sure you tour. You can absolutely stop by. You can take a look around, see if people are dressed, if they are engaged, if call bells are being answered, if people seem distressed or if they seem happy. If you go at mealtime, which is a great time to go, make sure that people are getting help when they need it to eat, that they have the utensils that they need and the special cups that they need or any other equipment that they need to feed themselves, if that's what they feel like they should be doing. Make sure there's no significant smells, that there's no significant issues with, let's say, damage to the walls or to the facility itself. Make sure that you would feel comfortable staying there before you put a loved one there.
Well, thank you, Lindsay, for joining us.
Thank you.
Lindsay Tice is a reporter with the Sun Journal in Lewiston. A link to her stories on nursing homes can be found on our website, mainepublic.org. For a woman born more than a century ago, Ruth Endicott lived an unconventional life. She got her pilot's license in her 20s, became a medical doctor in her 30s, married at age 40, and had two kids. And she didn't retire until she was nearly 90 years old. Endicott passed away earlier this month at the age of 103, just weeks after Patty White had a chance to talk with her as part of our series of conversations with Maine centenarians.
Some memories flow more easily than others from Ruth Endicott's 103-year-old mind. The Gettysburg Address? Easy.
47 years ago, our fathers brought forth on this continent a new nation.
But ask her about herself, about her fondest memory.
Fondest memory? I can't remember that either. I guess they're all so good.
Endicott's daughter, 60-year-old Lynn Freeman, is alongside to help jog her mother's memory. She pulls out a wooden box about the size of a shoebox and reminds her mom that she used to catch bullfrogs as a little girl to sell as bait.
Is this what you used to catch frogs with?
I remember that I had them stored up. Had enough for about 4 days. The fishermen didn't come back anymore. The tourist summer had gone by. So I was stuck with 4 days' worth of frogs. They died. I was so sorry.
Endicott says she grew up on a farm in Belgrade, and yes, she really did walk a mile to and from school in the snow. After graduating, she got a job doing office work at the Portsmouth Naval Shipyard. And as her daughter reminds her, she also picked up an unusual hobby.
You had gotten your pilot's license, remember?
Endicott says she befriended the wife of a pilot who also knew how to fly and learned from her.
I was working at the Navy Yard, and I would come every afternoon that I could out to the place where I could fly. It was one I had planned to fly up to Belgrade, pick up my parents and have surprise them. But the World War began, and I couldn't even do that. What a disappointment that was.
During the war, Endicott joined the Women's Army Corps and worked as a court stenographer in London. Her service would later earn her 4 medals. After she returned to the U.S., she studied chemistry at Colby College, then went on to the Women's Medical College of Pennsylvania and became a family doctor. She returned to Maine to do her residency at Maine Medical Center, where she met her future husband, Miles Freeman.
And you were an intern, and Daddy was a med tech?
Hmm.
And he came into the cafeteria where you were sitting with a friend, and you nudged your friend and said, I'm going to marry that man.
He had black hair, too.
Like your father.
Yes.
The couple bought a house in Ogunquit, out of which Endicott based her medical practice. She made house calls. Her record was 800 in 1 year, until she retired at age 89. During our visit, Freeman tells her mother about a birthday card she received the year before.
So many people have said it was you that inspired me to become a doctor as a woman.
Really?
Yes. Last year, you got a card from a doctor. She wrote and said that her father used to bring her to see you because he wanted her to see that women could be doctors, and so she grew up to be a doctor.
Well,
you inspired a lot of people.
Then, just as she's done throughout this visit, Endicott thanks her daughter for holding her memories.
Well, I'm glad you can remember that. Thank you, honey.
You're welcome, Mom. To have a parent that is 103, there's such history in this family, and so much of it I don't know because my mother was so private. She never spoke of herself. She was very humble, very quiet. And she'd much rather talk about you and where you're from and what your life is like than to talk about herself. And I've always admired that about her. But on the other hand, I don't know a whole lot. And I only find out these things when other people come along and remind her of something.
What does Endicott think is the secret to a long life? She's not sure, but her daughter suggests it was her mom's habits.
How about clean living? No smoking, no drinking, no card playing.
No card playing, even.
Ruth Endicott passed away peacefully at home on the 1st of December. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
All this week, we're profiling centenarians in Maine. It's part of a joint project with Downeast Magazine. To read and hear more of their stories, visit our website at mainepublic.org/century. And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and also join us tomorrow on Maine Calling at 1 o'clock. It's a listen back. It's an encore program about the joy of jazz music. I'm Jennifer Mitchell.